Welcome back to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori. I am at the Greenbrier, America's Resort, and Robert Harris joins me, the Vice President of Golf here at the Greenbrier. And Robert's in his 30th season here, so he's seen a lot. He's probably played a lot here, and it's such a great honor to talk with you.
Thank you, Ann. It's a pleasure to have you here this week, and I know you've probably set some course records amongst our three courses.
Well, yes, my evil twin, maybe. But, you know, let's start with the Old White. It's just such a classic Charles Blair McDonald course, designed it in 1914. And it was the first 18-hole golf course at the Greenbrier. And it's just such a gem. It was a joy to play.
Well, if you look at the top 100 golf courses, you'll see McDonald and Rayner and Banks. They're all a team on a lot of those golf courses. And one neat thing about ours is our par three, their signature holes, start with the longest. The Biarritz is our number three, the Redan's number eight, Eden's number 15, and it finishes with the shortest of holes, the home hole, the short hole.
Yeah, isn't it interesting that the Old White finishes with a par three?
It adds a lot of drama, and certainly during our ten PGA Tour events, the finishing hole, the tournament was in doubt until the last shot was holed.
Right. I was just saying to our caddy Chandler that what a great finishing hole, you know, and he said that they'd have the amphitheater seating, and to end on a par three, it must have been so exciting to see these guys get close to that pin.
Absolutely. And, you know, one year we had the owner put up to get galleries to sit on the 18th green. If there was a hole in one, everyone got $100. If there was two, $500. And if there had been a third one, and one year we had two hole in ones on the final day, and the galleries got pretty big after that on the 18th hole. So we had a fun time chanting the last seven or eight groups, you know, hole in one, hole in one. We would do it seven times and then stop so the players could tee off. And Tom Watson came to the 18th hole and he rolled one right over the cup, and would have been memorable beyond compare.
So whose idea was it to give everybody in the gallery money for a hole in one?
Well, the owner is a real promoter. He loves the place. He loves all the employees and the team members that work here. He loves the state of West Virginia. He put on the tournament to really promote the state and how beautiful it is and all the positive qualities of West Virginia. So it was his idea to just create some real drama, and boy, did it really take place.
And how many holes in ones, approximately?
There's been, during the PGA Tour event, I believe a total of four, but two of them all in one day.
Ah, wow, that's awesome. And you mentioned Tom Watson, and I understand he thinks the opening hole here is the best opening hole in golf.
It drops down to the fairway. You're elevated above the fairway some 30 feet. But one thing about the mountains in West Virginia, unlike maybe, say, the Rockies or whatever, is they're in layers. So in the morning, the clouds, the humidity, as you probably saw this week, sits in those layers. And it's four, five, six layers up to the top of the ridge. And it just can't be any more spectacular.
Yeah, I mean, just the scenery is so surreal. The mountain, it's in the background. And the greens are fairly big, but they're tough. They're fast. And, you know, they're tough to read sometimes.
Well, McDonald thought the greens on a golf course were like the face in a portrait. That's where all the character is, and that's where all the emphasis went. So I would say there's not an easy green to putt on the Old White, though none of them are so radical or so extreme that you just know a three putt's coming.
And going back to the par threes, I mean, they're just classic holes, as you say. You know, the C.B. McDonald, we play Shinnecock on the east end of Long Island, and, you know, the Rodin hole, and they're all so special. It's funny how some of those same names have carried over to other courses.
Well, that's right. He took the great holes of Great Britain and one from France and brought them over to the United States long before media had a chance to compare them all, and he would fit those holes. Same name, Mounds, Punch Bowl, Principal's Nose, Alps, Narrows, the Cape Hole, and just make them fit the landforms that he was given to build a golf course.
And it's interesting, Robert, that the two par fives are on the back, and they're only two par fives.
That's correct. They're side by side. So playing against the prevailing wind, you have a pretty long hole called long, and then coming downwind, playing from west to east, you have the Oaks hole, And so one's really a three-shot hole, and the other one's a good birdie chance on 17.
So I'm sure you have some great Sam Snead stories, right?
Well, probably the most famous, well, there's lots of them, but one when he was a young assistant pro, he was out playing, and he was on the mounds hole, the fifth hole, and he drove the green. It was over 300 yards. Now, this is in the 1930s, mind you, and little did he know, but one of the officers of the parent company, the railroad based out of Cleveland, Ohio, the ball rolled right through his legs up on the green. And so he was all hot about it. He was going to, whoever that is, kick him off the course. Oh, he's an employee. Oh, he needs to be fired. Well, sir, but maybe this is a great publicity story that we have a pro here that can drive a 300-yard green.
So Sam
was fearing for his job, but then the manager of the Greenbrier stood up for him, and it turned into a real positive.
Talk about some of the rounds he's had here, because I understand, did I read on the, he had some great historic facts in the golf cart on the monitor, and that he had a hole-in-one when he was in his 80s?
That's correct. And so we had a member guest tournament underway, and Sam was doing a Beat the Pro contest. So each group that would come up to the 18th hole, you had a chance to wager some golf pro shop merchandise. If you hit closer to the pin than Sam did, you would get double your money in merchandise. If you lost to him, then you would still get a gift certificate for that amount. Anyway, so Sam had been out there for several hours. Everybody enjoyed the company, photographs, all that. The last group comes up, and one of his old cronies, like a 35 handicapper, gets up with a wood club. So the shot's 140 yards. Hits it, it kind of bounces around in front of the green, but it rolls up 10 feet from the hole. Now, the head pro and I are up in the clubhouse doing the scoring, so we're watching this, and we're thinking, oh, my goodness, this is going to ruin Sam's day to lose to this guy that he's played with for, 50 years. Well, then Sam gets over the ball three or four times, and little did we know, but his competitor, if you will, is saying, Sam, how many of you hit in the water today? Sam, have you shanked it today yet? And so Sam backs away. So finally, and keep in mind, the clubhouse is full of patrons having lunch. We have a violin and a piano playing. There's this classical music. Everybody's got the windows open because now Sam with a straw hat is the center of attention. And he hits this shot, and it flies in the cup. And if you've ever been around a ball that flew in the cup, your eyes are like, where did it go? And then you hear the clack of the ball in the cup, and the clubhouse just exploded, and he's holding his hands up like an Olympic fighter, And so, needless to say, it was a fun award ceremony that afternoon with Sam there in his final hole-in-one.
That's quite a memory for sure. You get excited just recalling that. So talk about Sam Snead's history with the Greenbrier.
So he was hired as an assistant pro before the Second World War in the 30s. And then he would leave in the winter, and he won the Oakland Open, I believe, 1938. That was the first tour event at the time that started the season. And then he would come, and he would be here most of the summer. Now, the war years, he was in the Navy and did exhibitions out in San Diego and back in Florida to raise money for war bonds. But after the war, after Dorothy Draper remodeled the hotel, it was turned into a hospital during the war years, and he played the tour, but he was here a lot. So when he would take breaks from the tour, he'd be here practicing and, glad handling with guests and everybody having their picture taken with Sam Snead. And, there was always the rumor that if Sam said hello to you, he'd put you'd get a charge for a $50 lesson. I knew the CFO when I came to work here in the early 90s, and he said, no, that was not true. But it's a great story.
Yes, but he did like to bet.
Sam was a sportsman. He and Ted Williams had all kind of, they would, at an award ceremony one time, Ted Williams is the last year's Sportsman of the Year, and they're in New York, and he just makes fun of Sam Snead, a golfer, Sportsman of the Year, a golfer. Sam, the ball's not even moving. It's sitting on a tee. So then Sam comes up, and everyone in the audience is laughing, and Sam says, well, Ted, one thing about golf, we have to play our foul balls.
That's great. Great line. Well, I've had the honor of interviewing both Ted Williams and Sam Snead when Sam was in New York, and he showed up at the interview with his little hat and was as charming as can be. And boy, it's a long time ago now, probably early 90s, late 80s. And Ted Williams, I got him in the 90s when he went back to Boston for the All-Star game. Talk about a baseball genius. And, you know, he's in the Fisherman's Hall of Fame. So I'm sure if Ted Williams was here, he was not only golfing, but he was probably fishing right in your wonderful, you know, water here.
Right. We have great fly fishing here in Howard's Creek and around nearby streams. But, yes, he and Sam did all those sportsman's shows back in the 60s. I used to just see him even before I had an interest in golf as a young boy. And he loved the he had a pet fish. He had a pond in front of his – he has a pond in front of his house, and he would have this big bass. And he would rustle the water, and the bass would come, and he'd lift it out of the water and show it to all his friends. And think, well, you know, Sam, you can't do that again. He said, yeah, it's my pet fish. And so he'd make a bet. I'll do it again. They're thinking one time, maybe. A fish doesn't want to be out of water. And he would hustle them, and the fish would come, and Sam would pick it. It was about a 5 or 6 pound bass. And so any way to win a bet, Sam would do it. But, you know, on the up and up.
I love those stories. So he was here throughout most of his life then, Sam Snead.
He worked here, you know, really from 1937, 1938, right until his passing in 2002. He was just a few days shy of his 90th birthday. And active and charming, as you say. And his dog Meister would sit out here by the tennis courts and head going left, right, watching the ball. Finally, usually one of the tennis pros on court 5, way away from the clubhouse, would throw a ball across all the courts. And then Meister, the retriever, would go around the clubhouse and sit on the other side of the porch and chew on that tennis ball. But not until he got one from the tennis pros.
Great memories, Robert. Really, really, you know, it's a special place because the Greenbrier has such a rich history, not only in golf, but, you know, with the entire hotel and the origin of the property and now Governor Justice, you know, owning this property. Talk a little bit about the governor. Does he play a lot of golf?
I would like to bug him a little bit, ask him to play a little more golf, but he's a good golfer. And he plays very little now, especially this year with all the special problems of all governmental agencies. But he cares so much about the people here. But he's a good golfer. He's played in the state amateur back when he was a young man. And even when he gets out now, occasionally you see the skeleton of a great swing.
The skeleton. That's being nice. Thank you very much. What's your best score on the Old White?
I think I've had a couple 65s, but it's been a few years ago. Not too recent, but it's a par 70 golf course. It's hard to score low because, as you mentioned earlier, there's only 2 par 5s. And for good players, the par 5s are those are where you're going to get your birdies.
And Stuart Appleby with that 59, what were your thoughts when you saw that one?
Well, that won't happen again, but it did. Kevin Chappell shot a 59 last year, and really, after some rework of the course, it was actually a much tougher golf course that Kevin had the 59 on. My goodness, 11 under par, it's hard to even fathom it.
That's crazy, as you say, on a par 70 and with the conditions during, you know, a PGA Tour event, correct?
They don't set the course up easy any day,
yeah,
and it plays tough. The pins are set near the edge of the greens, and I think we had a little rain, so just a little bit softer conditions, but still 11 under par is 11 under par.
That's just crazy. The first day we were here, we played the Meadows course, which I just loved. It's just one of those old school golf courses designed by Dick Wilson back in 62 and then Bob Cupp in 99. And I guess according to the notes here, it began as a 9-hole course named Lakeside.
Correct. And during the building of the Government Relocation Center, affectionately known as the Bunker, as the project went on, they kept looking for places for fill material. And either they didn't engineer the dig right, or maybe the plans were changing as this excavation of the mountainside, this hillside for the bunker. And they were looking for places. So the Lakeside was the original 9-hole course, probably going back to 1910. And in the west end of our property, the creek runs through it. It's a bit, you know, it's a bit boggy down there. So they began, Dick Wilson was in Army Intelligence, a very famous designer. Bay Hill and Doral come to mind off the bat down in Florida. And they were looking, someone probably said, Dick, you had security clearance during the war, because he would camouflage airfields. And he probably did this drawing without knowing any more about the project. And they started dumping all the fill material down on the western end of the property and built nine more holes. And that became the Lakeside course until Bob Cupp redid it in 1999, and he did a masterful job as well.
And that's a 70 as well, right? Par 70?
It's a par 70 now, correct. And it's got the deep bunkers with the straight faces and the sod stack faces. You want to stay out of the bunkers for sure when you play the Meadows course.
Did I hear Lee Trevino had something to do with the sod bunkers?
So for a number of years, he was our professional emeritus. And, of course, Lee could do anything with a golf ball. I mean, he could make it go backwards if he wanted to. And so I think he planted the seed of creating some uniqueness that it would make it a different course than, say, the old white in a mountain setting.
I just love that meadow. It's just so special. It's, narrow fairways, the greens, quick greens, and tough to read as well, some of those greens.
Mountain courses are courses that are near mountains. There's always the trick. You need to find where the stream is. Typically, there's always a stream that handles the water off of the ridges or the mountains. And that's, whenever you're lining up a putt, you got to give that direction a little bias to the break.
Okay. Now you tell me. I'll remember that for the next time. What's your best score on the meadow?
I don't want to say. I don't think I've broken par on it yet.
Really? Do you think it's a little tougher than Old White?
I find it to be a tougher golf course. I just don't know it as well, and I don't play it as much, but it's I always end up in one of those, two of those bunkers, and then there's a couple bogeys always on my card.
Well, it's tighter for sure, the Meadows, than Old White, and your short game has to be so on, because if you're in that rough or in those bunkers, you have to be so precise.
Yeah, correct. So it's hard to play around the Meadows without two or three bogeys, and I've played the All White many times without a bogey. For me, I know the course better. I can strategize. If I hit a bad drive, I'm in the rough. I know where to lay it up, where I know I can chip it up or pitch it up close.
And the Greenbrier. I enjoyed the Greenbrier. Seth Rayner, who, is from our neck of the woods on the east end of Long Island, he originally designed it back in 1924, and then Jack Nicklaus did a redesign in 77. And then I know with the flood, it wreaked havoc on some of the courses, but I'm sure you'll be working on that.
Right. So right now the Greenbrier course is a Nicklaus course, and you'll see it when you play it. So we currently have 10 holes open, so you can play it as a 9-hole course or loop around and play 18. So if you play the Meadows course now has 6 holes of what used to be the Greenbrier course. So if there were no one out on the golf course in the late afternoon, you could go out on the Greenbrier course and play all 18, combining the two courses, actually. But, yeah, it's tree-lined, heavily wooded, big oak trees, beautiful turf fairways. I mean, just spectacular golf holes in a setting. Runs right along the railroad tracks that, hauls coal from the coal fields of West Virginia and Kentucky, to the port in Virginia.
And the Fazio design, the Snead course at the Sporting Club, I thought that was terrific. Now, that was a little more forgiving with the fairways. But the greens there are tough as well. So the variety here is spectacular.
Yeah, it's excellent. And Tom Fazio did a masterful job building what used to be an airport. You would never know it by the terrain and some of the mounds and so forth on the golf course. But it's tough as well. As you noted, the greens have a lot of undulation and a lot of speed. As a private club, they don't get quite as much play. And the speed of those greens are newer. I've never played them when they're even medium speed. They're always fast, really, really fast.
So of all the players who have come through the Greenbrier, tell me some stories. I mean, obviously you had Sam Snead, then Lee Trevino, Nick Faldo, Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer. I mean, there really must not be a golfer you haven't met, Robert.
I think the most charming person, I'll go with the charm line, was Lee Iacocca. Wow. When Lee Iacocca, he was here as a speaker for an automotive group, and he came down to play golf with his son, who's, a grown man, and said hello to everybody, shook hands with everybody, asked me for a lesson. I gave him a lesson. They went out and played 9 holes. When he came back up to the clubhouse, 2 hours later, he called every employee here by their first name.
Really?
I mean, we have name badges on, but you sort of got to get close to really see the name. But the young men, the men handling the clubs, cleaning the clubs, oh, Ronnie, Eddie, thank you, walked in the locker room. James, Chief, good to see. Just as if they were best friends. That was the best I've ever seen anyone handle people and make people just feel so good. He just left a wake of goodness wherever he went.
That's impressive. That's really impressive that, you know, he could remember everybody's name like that.
He was a master at it. I've never seen anyone come close. I've seen people in sales that are very, very good, but Lee Iacocca was the best.
Isn't that interesting? How about some of the golfers throughout the years here? Anybody make more of an impression on you?
Well, Tiger Woods played several times, and I had the chance just to chat with him as a starter on the 10th tee, and he was as personable and just as nice as could be, and just, you know, relaxed, and, you know, where you're from, you know, that sort of thing. And I'm a Tiger fan, number one, but I didn't really know how I would act, you know, up close to him, but he couldn't have been nicer.
Of all the guys from that era, who plays the best here?
Oh, my goodness. Charles Howell's played every year, except last year was the first year he missed. So he's a really steady ball striker and has placed consistently well, you know, as all golf courses, fairways and greens. And as hard as the old white is, it still takes about 20 under, you know, to win the PGA Tour event here. And he's a player that can consistently go out and shoot 2, 3, 4 under par every day. You know, not known for his super low rounds, but always solid ball striker, solid putting, doesn't miss a lot of greens.
Right. I mean, and distance is important, but I wouldn't think distance is the premium on any of these courses.
No, so the mountain air here, we're about 1,800 feet above sea level. So in the summertime, there's about an extra 5% of carry on a normal summer day. So the courses play a little bit shorter than what the scorecard reads.
I would think the premium's on the short game and on putting, especially, you know, on old white.
So the whole strategy of the course is, let's just say you're 160 yards from the pin. If you're in the left rough, left center, right center of the fairway, right rough, you could be really hitting 5 different clubs, simply because where you have to shoot your ball. And guests that have been here for many years, when they played the old white before the renovation, if they were 160, that was automatically a 5-iron or automatically a 4-wood, whatever it might have been. Now, if you want to play a good score, have a good score, you really listen to your 4 caddy or your caddy, and you really need to play. It could be a different club depending on where your ball is.
Right. I mean, I noticed that right away. It tests all aspects of your game, all the courses here.
That's correct. So if you get on the wrong side, then the greens are all angled a little bit. So they're bunkers. So if you're on the wrong side and you're not paying attention, you'll just be in a bunker. Now you're going to have probably a hard shot because the bunkers are relatively deep. But if you're smart, you'll play maybe not even at the green and play to one side, where now you have a chance, an open chip or a short pitch, to make a par. And if you don't use that strategy, then your score will generally be poor.
All this I have to remember for the next time. Oh, your background. Just tell me a little bit about your background, Robert. What brought you to the Greenbrier?
So I'm a Florida native, but I had worked in West Virginia back in the late 70s. And so I knew some of the staff over here, some of the executives at Glade Springs Resort. And I left West Virginia and was hired as director of golf at not too far from PGA Tour headquarters at the Ponte Vedra Inn and Club. And in the winter of 1990-91, the executives here, they wanted to overhaul the golf department and reached out to me and asked me if I was interested in moving to White Sulphur Springs. And it's, you know, so for me as a golf pro, you know, it was an 18-hole course, and it was a 36-hole facility at Ponte Vedra. And so coming here, 54-hole facility, it's like having being a chef at a bigger and bigger kitchen, if you will. So it takes more skills and more dedication and a more talented staff to execute it well.
And talk about a change too, from the Florida flatness to, you know, the terrain here in the mountains, and it's so different here, the golf, right, compared to Florida.
Well, the beauties here is incomparable, really, with the ridges, and all four seasons really are just fantastic here. And yes, I miss Florida sometimes on a cold winter day here, but I don't miss the Florida humidity. And this morning was 59 degrees. It just, oh my goodness, I felt like I was in the Adirondacks this morning. And of course, it warmed up to 80 degrees this afternoon. And that's just the best of all worlds.
It's a very special place, really very magical place. Why do you think that's the case, Robert?
Well, I'll speak with golf first. When you check into your cottage or your suite or your hotel room, the doorman take your clubs. Our staff shuttles them down to the golf club. The golf club's just really a quarter mile or less from the main building. All the courses, the locker rooms play out of one clubhouse, the golf academy, the practice range, the courses all go out and back in. So it's very, very compact there. You don't have to worry about shuttling, forgetting your shoes, you know, leaving a jacket in your locker, that sort of thing. So logistically, it's very easy. And maybe one day you want to take a break and take a lesson. The golf academy is right here at the other end of the driving range. So it's all out of one clubhouse. Not too many places have that convenience. Secondly, we have so many activities. We really have over 60 activities, and they're all right here on the main campus. The gun club's across the street, but you know, it's just a 2-minute shuttle ride. You can do, you know, you can do bikes, you can do horseback riding. Of course, we have tennis, indoor tennis, all kind of fitness facilities, hiking trails. So spa, world-class spa, indoor pool, outdoor pool. So we have something for everyone. And on top of that, we have world-class dining and 11 restaurants and tons of public space in the main building. And there's so many rooms to explore. So let's just say you get inclement weather for a day. You can really spend several hours indoors and just have a grand time with a group of friends in all the public spaces. So there's a lot of elements that add up to a great formula for guests wanting to come here.
Absolutely. And, you know, not to forget the hospitality, but that goes with everything, you know, the proximity of everything, so many activities and things to do right here, as you say, on campus. So it's it really is, you know, it's a win-win for everybody.
The employees here are multi-generational, and the pride is just we work on training, we work on presentation every single day and all that we do. And it's the amount of hard work and the amount of pride that we take in meeting guests or welcoming guests, returning guests, and first-time guests. It permeates the property from the doorman right on to the you know, the wave goodbye when you're going out the gate.
Absolutely, and that's very special. Whether it's, you know, from Robert Harris, VP of Golf, to you know, the gentleman driving the shuttle who's so friendly and wants to chat and wants to, you know, say hello, welcome, where are you from? Everybody's genuinely very, very friendly. And I think that along with the rich history of not only the golf, but the you know, the hotel, it's just a fascinating place. Thanks again for having me. It's just been wonderful.
Thank you, Ann. My pleasure.
Appreciate it. Robert Harris, VP of Golf here at the Greenbrier. Sports Interview with Ann LaGore is brought to you by Dune Jewelry and by Hampton's Rope Collection. Savor the memories with sand from your favorite beach or golf course in timeless pieces for men and women. DuneJewelry.com. And by Peak Vision Sunglasses. Zero distortion, unmatched clarity. Change your game. Peak Vision, PEAKVision.com.